Less than 1% of the artifacts in the collection of the Smithsonian Institution are on public display, but 3D printing could help the agency send millions more artifacts to museums and schools around the world in one way or another. Gunter Weibel is director of the Digitization Program Office, and Adam Metallo is 3D Program Officer at the Smithsonian Institution. Both Service to America Medal finalists in the Citizen Services category for their pioneering work at that agency. And gentlemen, thank you both for being here, and I want to recognize your colleague Vincent Rossi also, who is part of the team. The three of you work together on this. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Gunter, I want to start with you and have you give me a thumbnail on 3D printing, first of all, because I think there are still some misconceptions about it, and the way that you're applying it then in the work that you're doing at the Smithsonian. Thank you for being here today.
Sure, absolutely. My pleasure. So 3D printing is really at the very end of our process. 3D printing is very accessible these days. You can buy a fairly cheap 3D printer to have in your home, but you don't need one in your home. You might be able to go to your local library or even order a 3D print online. And what we've done really is we saw this technology, we saw how compelling it is, and we thought, what if we could bring Smithsonian collection objects, these iconic items that people see in our collections if they're lucky enough to travel and come visit us, what if we could bring those online so people can interact with them online? If they can spin them around, they can take measurements, they can draw details they wouldn't even be able to see in person. And what if we could put the cherry on top, if we could then let them 3D print those objects as well? And that's what we've done for 20 iconic Smithsonian objects, ranging from the Wright Flyer to the gunboat Philadelphia, Amelia Earhart's flight suit, an amazing array of collection items, as well as scientific research sites.
The 3D scanning capability and the 3D printing capability that is happening all over the world, Gunter, is changing not just the work that you do at the Smithsonian, but changing the world of scholarship, and changing the world of museums and presenting information to people in what ways, besides just the ability to lock onto something?
I think what we're the most proud of and the most interested in is how it changes education. Because what we've seen after we've launched this collection of 20 iconic Smithsonian objects at 3d.si.edu is that educators have really latched onto it. So we've heard from a school in Pennsylvania where teachers are using the online 3D representation of the Wright Flyer to talk to their students about complex concepts such as aerodynamics. You know, they can show their students that the wing of the Wright Flyer is shaped exactly the way it's shaped because the science underlying that is what makes that airplane fly. And this amazing discovery then translates into a lot of enthusiasm in the classroom and really brings science to life. And that's one of the things we're particularly excited about supporting.
What's the process by which you go about determining what's next? I mean, you've talked, Gunter's talked, Adam, about these 20 items that you've worked on so far. Certainly that's not where your work ends with the several million pieces that you have in the collection.
Right. So basically we think about what collection items can we make the most impact with. So can we hit that note of helping with education? Can we also help with scientific research? And many times, this one act of digitization, you can help many different realms within the museum world's objectives. So one example would be having digitized fossil whales in Chile. So we actually flew down to Chile where they were expanding the Pan American Highway, and they actually bumped into a number of whale fossils. So we had to come down there and digitize the site as it existed really quickly before the construction continued. And having done that, researchers were able to publish new findings about how and why these whales were died there on this location. But now we actually have these other outcomes from having digitized them. For instance, we have the world's largest museum quality 3D print on display. One of these fossil whales is actually replicated, and it's on the walls at the Natural History Museum for everybody to discover. And it's also we're also creating educational curriculum based on these same data sets. So these data sets have a long lifespan. A lot of mileage can be gotten out of this one act of digitization.
And that's where I wanted to go next, because as I think about what you're talking about that particular incident, the documentation potential of seeing things the way they are and being able to not just replicate pictures but replicate items is tremendously powerful.
The idea that you can actually physically replicate these objects and hold them in their hand, and not just make a sort of cheap replica, but actually have the fidelity and the resolution and sort of the tactile sense that this is the real object that you're holding. Of course, nothing can ever replace the original object, but this is definitely the next best thing, and these can be replicated over and over across the country in the classroom.
How did you decide, Gunter, that this is where you wanted to start, and what's the process that you're going through to decide where to go next?
So we were really intrigued by seeing this technology gain a lot of traction and by a lot of other industries using this technology, whether it's Hollywood or whether it's architecture or whether it's medicine. And we were trying to figure out how can we apply that in a museum sector and figure out what the most meaningful way is to execute on our mission, the increase and diffusion of knowledge with this new tool. We didn't want the tail to wag the dog, so to speak. We didn't want technology to be the driver. We wanted our mission to be the driver. So we went to all of our museums. We have 19 museums, 9 research centers, and we asked them, can you nominate an iconic object or a scientific mission that you feel would greatly benefit from this 3D treatment? And that's how we came up with the first batch of objects that we put online at 3d.si.edu. And now what we're trying to do is sort of turn the corner. The technology is still a bit unformed for us in the sense that everything we do is lovingly handcrafted. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to get one of these collection objects digitized. So we're now trying to figure out how can we bring down the cost of this effort and how can we do more faster, quicker, but at the same kind of quality, so we can bring more collection objects to the public.
Yeah, I guess the term I would think of is scalability, and how do you do more, and how do you do it in a more automated way so that you, my notes here say you have 137 million items in the Smithsonian's collection. I can't imagine a day, in the immediate future at least, where they'll all be through this process, but I certainly can imagine as technology improves and as the cost comes down, both through your efforts and through just the very nature of technology itself, that we could see this expanding in a way that today is not conceivable. Is that, am I fair to assume that, Adam?
I would say without a doubt, the scanning technologies and the 3D printing technologies are getting nothing but faster, cheaper, more user-friendly. And something that we can do is look at other industries and how technologies, and specifically 3D technologies, have changed them. If you look at Hollywood, 20 years ago, 3D tech was reserved for nothing but the biggest budgets and the Hollywood blockbusters. Mm-hmm. Today, 3D technologies are a way to make movies more economically. So that industry was revolutionized by this. And I think that we'll probably be seeing the same thing in the museum world.
What is the next step, or what is the thing that you want to or expect to be doing in this field 2 years or 5 years from now that is, I won't say a pipe dream today, but is something that you say, wow, that's going to be a big deal, and yet it's on the horizon, at least for you, Gunter?
Yeah, we have a lot of pipe dreams. That's really what makes us tick here. Because, you know, what's a pipe dream one day is the reality the next day. So one of the things we see on the horizon is further automation of this process. So I'll give you an example. In the traditional digitization realm, where we take digital images of what we call the flat objects in our collections, those that don't really need the 3D treatment, there are now conveyor belt technologies where you can put 1.8 million items a year through that technology and digitize it. And those are staggering, staggering numbers we've never been able to achieve. So that's now possible in the traditional digitization realm, and we're bringing that technology to the National Mall in the fall. What we want to do is identify similar technologies that can give us similar amounts of throughput for 3D. And we're already seeing, at least in the research and development phase, that those technologies start existing. And we're actively looking at them, investigating them, and hoping to bring those to the Smithsonian as soon as they're mature enough to do so. Again, with the overall goal of, we have seen in this launch that making this content available resonates tremendously with the public. We got more traffic to 3d.si.edu than the Smithsonian homepage during the launch week. We had 15 million folks tweet about our effort during our first couples of days of launch. So we know the hunger is out there, and we want to fulfill that hunger and the promise of this technology.
We just have a minute or so left, gentlemen. One would assume that anyone in the academic community would hear about this technology, think about the implications of it, and be excited and enthusiastic about it. Was that the case, or was there some resistance that you had to navigate as you first started this project?
Well, I would say that there are certainly instances where people say, okay, I'll let you 3D scan it, but we're going to do the traditional methods too. Mm-hmm. But by and large, the experience has been that the 3D data gives you as much and more data faster and better. In general, it's been a great experience. And what we're looking for further is other collaborators to make use of the data and tell us, you know, how can we refine our processes to give them exactly what they need.